Palestinians. How significant is the controversial visit at this point in time, and what is it trying to achieve? Stay with us for a debate on that.
Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has been projected the winner in the disputed U.S. presidential vote. That means in about 2 months, Donald Trump will have to hand in power to Biden. His administration, however, is using every opportunity to take controversial steps. On Thursday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo paid a visit to an Israeli settlement in the occupied West Bank to further consolidate Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands.
During the Trump administration, America stands with Israel like never before. Indeed, the commitment we've made, the ironclad commitment we've made to the Jewish state, will continue.
Pompeo said the U.S. will label the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign as anti-Semitic and cancerous. He said Washington will require that imports from Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank be labeled as made in Israel. In 2016, the United Nations Security Council adopted a resolution to reaffirm the illegality of Israeli settlements. Referring to Israelis as an occupying power, the resolution called on Israel to stop settlement constructions and abide by its obligations under international law. Later in the day, Mike Pompeo also visited the occupied Golan Heights, which Israel seized from Syria in a 1967 war. President Trump recognized Israel's sovereignty over the region last year. Pompeo's Thursday visits drew the ire of the Palestinians. A spokesman for Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas slammed the U.S. labeling move as a violation of international law. Also, senior member of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Wassel Abu Youssef, said Pompeo's labeling announcement, quote, reaffirms the partnership between U.S. President Trump and the occupation. Another senior PLO member, Hanan Ashrawi, said Mike Pompeo's visit is aimed at setting another illegal precedent. Pompeo's visits to an Israeli settlement and the occupied Golan Heights were controversial enough. However, they are dwarfed by other anti-Palestinian moves taken by the Trump administration in the past 4 years. Trump announced Jerusalem al-Quds as the capital of Israel. Palestinians say the city belongs to them and is the capital of their state. Trump also relocated the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to al-Quds. The American president also showed unprecedented support for Israeli crimes, including bombardment of the Gaza Strip and killing of Palestinians across the occupied territories, setting new precedents in Washington's deep-seated and biased support for the Israeli occupation and crimes against Palestinians.
Well, let me talk about my report in there. Author and journalist DeMarco Glenn is joining us from California. Political analyst Michael Lane is also joining us from Washington, D.C. Good to have both of you gentlemen on the show. Let's go to Mark in California. Pompeo is the first American top diplomat visiting Israeli settlements that are illegal by the UN resolutions. What message does the U.S. try to relay?
Well, I think we have to look at this in terms of the timing of it all, especially here in the United States in the midst of this contested election. We don't know which way this is going to go. And so I think that the president, through his Secretary of State, is trying to hammer out what he may fear are his last diplomatic steps of his administration. At the very least, what it shows is that Trump is intent, as he promised 4 years ago when he was just a candidate, that he is going to come to some sort of practical and workable resolution to the situation that will at least, even if it does not bring justice, to the Palestinians and to the Syrians and the other peoples of the region who have been brutalized by this this mad dog, that at the very least that it would offer America at least the means of extricating itself from what has become an extremely dangerous situation to her personally. All we have to do is take into account the extreme cost that the United States has paid as a result of its incestuous and dirty relationship with Israel in terms of the first Gulf War 30 years ago, and then, of course, the exacerbation of that situation under George W. Bush and what has gone on now with the Arab Spring and everything else. And Trump really would just like to see the United States divorce itself from any more costly engagements in terms of American blood and American treasury.
Now, Michael, there are people and pundits in the United States who are against the U.S. blind support for Tel Aviv, arguing that this support is a liability for the United States. Your take on that?
Well, as we look forward, it's problematic whether Donald Trump is going to be able to spend four more years carrying out his foreign policy in the Middle East as opposed to Joe Biden altering whatever courses he may be inclined to alter as we do that. There's no doubt that Donald Trump has been a strong ally, supporter, and friend, not only of the State of Israel, but personally of Prime Minister Netanyahu. And that has been reflected in the policies, not only vis-a-vis Israel, things that he took, such as the recognition of Jerusalem as the capital, the moving of the United States Embassy, the recognition of the annexation of the Golan, the recognition of some of the settlements in the West Bank being legal, et cetera. But, you know, other things. I mean, Trump has just been really all in terms of that friendship with the United States and Israel. As we look forward, or not as we look forward, hang on a second on that. So what is Pompeo doing over there today? Well, as we've discussed several times, and as I've opined on this program several times, the United States participation in the JCPOA was not really the United States. Obama did not have the authority to commit the United States to that without a treaty and ratification by the Senate. It was just the policy of the Obama administration. The same thing is true here. Many of these things that President Trump has done are policies of the Trump administration. They are not things that lock and bind his successors into following those particular policies. So I think the reason and the objective, really, of the Pompeo visit here is not just a victory tour around Israel to say, okay, this is what we've done, fond farewell, because they haven't tossed in the towel on the election yet. But this is really an attempt, should Joe Biden be inaugurated in January as President of the United States, he's doing his best to create an environment where Biden will have an extraordinarily difficult time reversing his policies in the Middle East as he was able to reverse some of Obama's policies.
Now, Mark, the United Nations and the international community both calling the Israeli settlement expansion illegal. What makes Washington disregard this and even give it its seal of approval?
I think what Trump, if I can be so bold as to crawl into his head and divine what I think he's trying to do, I think what it is that Trump has recognized that ever since 1967, that all of this debate within the United Nations and, you know, people throwing up the argument of international law, that it really has done nothing. All that it has done is to create a bunch of noise pollution that has given Israel the green light to keep gobbling up more Palestinian land. And I think that Trump, being the very shrewd and astute businessman that he is, he understands that what has to be done is to do an end run around this, an end run around the United Nations, and to just establish that certain facts on the ground do exist, and then use those as the launching point for a new paradigm in terms of coming to some resolution to this problem. And we have to remember as well, you know, as much as we want to fall back on the legality of the United Nations resolutions, the fact of the matter is that the United Nations was the one responsible for creating this mess in the first place. It was the United Nations that recognized Israel, that recognized this occupation within historic Palestine. And so I would counsel my friends around the world who like to fall back on what appears to be the legal strength of the United Nations resolutions that, you know, the United Nations has done nothing except to facilitate this problem and in many cases just to make it worse.
Michael, what does Pompeo's Golan Heights visit indicate? I mean, is legitimizing the Israeli occupation of the Syrian land what the U.S. is trying to do?
First, let me say I agree with about 99.5% of what my colleague just said on that. Really sort of spot-on analysis. But so what is Pompeo doing in the Golan? Mm-hmm. In Israel's mind, and indeed probably in much of the United States government mind, Israel was really never going to give back the Golan. It was just strategically, as a military piece of terrain, much too important
for them to abandon without certain assurances that they were never going to get. So they stayed there and occupied since 1967, and ultimately a short time ago decided they were going to formally annex the land. And it was only just last year, in fact, that President Trump, on behalf of the United States, or you might argue on behalf of his administration, said that they were going to recognize that particular annexation, and the Golan is now no longer occupied territory in the eyes of the Trump administration. It is now part of Israel. Pompeo was there to underscore that this has been the policy of the Trump administration for about a year and a half, maybe just a couple months longer than that. And to create an awareness and to create a sort of aura of success over the recognition of that annexation to the point where on the international stage in 2 months or 3 months or whenever Biden gets around to reevaluating and reassessing what's going on there, he finds it more difficult to reverse that U.S. policy than he otherwise might. Now, let me say, I think that Joe Biden has his own ideas. He's been around for 47 years in American government. He has a particular deep loathing, not only for President Trump, but for his policies. And he's unlikely to be pressured or dissuaded from making his own independent evaluations and decisions as to how he's going to pursue Middle East policy as well as anything else that he does so from the Oval Office. But this is really what Pompeo is all about. He's trying to highlight, potentially on the Trump administration's way out the door, that this is a success of the Trump administration, and see if he can make it more of an enduring and lasting legacy of the Trump administration than something that can be easily reversed.
Now, Mark, U.S. Secretary of State has called the global pro-Palestine BDS movement, I'm quoting him, a cancer and anti-Semitic. So how come the U.S. is equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism? They're two totally different issues, as you know. Is Washington trying to silence or, let's say, criminalize anti-Zionism?
No, I think that what Trump is very astutely doing, as I said before, he is a businessman, and he knows the importance of the art of the deal and of selling. And he knows that in order to maintain the support that he has in Israel, where he is at least within the people themselves, the right-wing element there, he's very popular. Although, as far as organized Jewish groups in this country go, he's extremely unpopular. And so simply by labeling BDS as being anti-Semitic, these are easy points to score for him, and especially given the fact that, as we're discussing here, Pompeo is in Israel. And this is just Trump's way of reestablishing, reminding people of his bona fides on this issue. And I think that it's important for us to keep in mind that, while Pompeo is there and shaking hands with Netanyahu and they're smiling and all the rest of that, we're not privy to the kinds of possibly heated discussions that are taking place behind closed doors when the mics and the cameras are off. We know that President Trump, back when he was candidate Trump, that he had made it a very strong part of his promised presidency that he was going to come to a peace deal in the Middle East that was going to, at least in a rudimentary way, was going to open the door for the Americans to get out as gracefully as possible from this mess. But he's only partly finished. Okay, so he's given Israel the Golan Heights. He's recognized, Jerusalem, moved the embassy, and he's achieved recognition on the part of these Gulf Arab countries. But the big thing here, obviously, is settling the Palestinian issue, which means, according to Trump's plans, giving the Palestinians 70% of the West Bank, which is wildly, wildly unpopular within the Israeli political class. Now, we may not see this. We may not see the video footage of Netanyahu kicking a hole in the wall or pounding his fist on the desk referencing this, but all can be rest assured that there are discussions taking place right now between Pompeo and Netanyahu that are not as cordial as the video footage that we are seeing right now, and that I would speculate that this the next part of this peace deal that Trump wants to push forward probably represents the main bulk of the conversation that's going on, to which the rest of us are simply not privy.
Now, Michael, U.S.-based human rights watchdog argues that rather than fighting systemic racism and far-right extremism in the United States, the Trump administration is undermining common fight against anti-Semitism by falsely equating it with peaceful support for boycotting Israel. Your comment.
You know, labeling BDS an anti-Semitic program is something that predates Donald Trump by quite a bit. This has been sort of mainstream thought and mainstream rhetoric in the United States, and there are exceptions and very, very high-profile, visible exceptions. But it has been rhetoric that has been used commonplace in the United States for more than a decade. So Trump is not really turning over new ground here. He's not setting a new precedent, a new policy. In fact, if I read the State Department's release correctly, what is new here is not the idea that BDS is an anti-Semitic thing, but that it is being officially labeled as such by the State Department on behalf of the United States government. It has always been part of the United States bipartisan support for Israel to condemn BDS. I don't think that that he is necessarily saying anybody who wants to internally in the United States argue that BDS is not anti-Semitic necessarily castigates them as an anti-Semitic person or having an anti-Semitic argument, but it was more towards countries and organizations that are advocating it and things like that, and so those organizations that are in the forefront vocally and active-wise in terms of promoting BDS are likely to be excluded from certain privileges of the United States as a result of that. How much of that can be done in the next 60 days, I don't know. They probably aren't organizations that got a lot of federal contracts from the United States or things anyway. But again, it's one more thing that has been announced very high profile with the attempt to make it very difficult for Joe Biden to undo that, should he choose to do so. I think Biden's pretty much been on board with that idea, though, that BDS is a really, really bad idea.
Okay, we're running out of time. I got one question for both of you gentlemen. What options are Palestinians left with, Mark, as the U.S. is keeping its blind and biased support for Israel? What can they do to redeem their rights and liberate their land? 1 minute, please.
Well, I think that all they can really do is stay the course and plead their case before the world, hoping that enough people of goodwill in the world will understand the horrible injustices that have been dumped on millions of innocent people. But at the same time, I do think that they have to develop a certain level of practicality in all of this and understand that, the American system is, we like to champion ourselves as being the land of the free and the home of the brave, but when it comes to our political system, it is every bit as much Israeli occupied territory as is historic Palestine. And so the Palestinians, I think, are going to have to be very practical about this.
Mike, your comments briefly, please.
Yeah, very briefly. So when President Trump unveiled, rolled out, imposed, whatever word you want to use, his deal of the century, and still had gone at that point close to 2 years without President Abbas returning his phone calls or those of his representatives or a meeting or anything like that, Trump was very careful to say that, okay, so there's going to be a four-year window here. The clock starts ticking now. We're going to keep this open for further discussions with the Palestinians to make sure that their input is received and that we can accommodate as many of their needs and wants as we possibly can. So a lot of that four-year window or a little bit of that four-year window has already ticked by. Clearly, Abbas is waiting for a new presidency to be established in the United States before he makes up his mind if he's going to engage on that. But I would suggest to the Palestinians that engaging with whoever is president of the United States sooner rather than later will preserve some of their things, because the more the reality gets locked in stone, the less likely they are to be able to maneuver and change some of that.
Okay, I appreciate your comments. Author and journalist Mark Glenn joined me from California. and political analyst Michael Lane from Washington, D.C. Top Indian host, Behrouz Najafi. I'll see you next time.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and we're going to be with you with another edition of Insights into the Holy Quran. And in this edition of the program, we'll discuss the 22nd chapter of the Holy Quran, Surah Al-Hajj, or Pilgrimage. Before moving on, let's just listen to some verses of this chapter, and we'll be back with you. Stay with us.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
لن ينال الله لحومها ولا دماؤها ولكن يناله التقوى منكم كذلك سخرها لكم لتكبروا الله على ما هداكم وبشر المحسنين.
Their meat will not reach Allah, nor will their blood, but what reaches him is piety from you. Thus have we subjected them to you, that you may glorify Allah for that to which he has guided you, and give good tidings to the doers of good.
So after the 36th verse discussed, the 37th verse continues saying, لَنْ يَنَالَ اللَّهَ لُحُومُهَا وَلَا دِمَاؤُهَا. There never reaches Allah their flesh nor their blood. وَلَكِنْ يَنَالُهُ التَّقْوَى مِنْكُمْ. But it is your piety that reaches him. كَذَلِكَ سَخَّرَهَا لَكُمْ لِتُكَبِّرُوا اللَّهَ عَلَى مَا هَدَاكُمْ. Thus has he made them subservient to you, that you might pronounce the greatness of Allah for what he has guided you aright. وَبَشِّرِ الْمُحْسِنِينَ. And give good tidings to the good doers. So this verse is trying to tell that the flesh of the animals, which is given as almsgiving, and the blood which is shed on the ground as the result of slaughtering the camels, are not the things that can attract the pleasure of Allah. Out of all this, The thing that attracts the content, pleasure of Allah, and makes you closer to His station is your piety, your sincerity, and somehow your pure intention of all doing these things. So the verse says, لَنْ يَنَالَ اللَّهَ لُحُومُهَا وَلَا دِمَاؤُهَا. There never reaches Allah their flesh nor their blood, وَلَكِنْ يَنَالُهُ التَّقْوَى مِنْكُمْ. But it is your piety that reaches Him. And this piety could be the result of true recognition and understanding from the Almighty Allah. Because Almighty Allah in the previous verse somehow showed us the importance of this conquest, which was done by taking the command of obedience and submission from the camel sometimes. But the Almighty Allah Himself said, كَذَلِكَ سَخَّرْنَاهَا لَكُمْ. Thus we have made them subservient to you, لَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ. That haply you may give thanks. So giving thanks, and in this verse, وَلَكِنْ يَنَالُهُ التَّقْوَى مِنْكُمْ, your piety, are the two things that must be the result of true recognition of the Almighty Allah. So it can be inferred from the verse that the Almighty Allah doesn't actually need us to do our things, to do our... He doesn't need our obedience. He doesn't need us to do our duties. But what he needs is the piety, which is good for ourselves. And that's why the verse says, لَنْ يَنَالَ اللَّهَ لُحُومُهَا وَلَا دِمَاؤُهَا. The flesh and their blood don't reach Allah. It means, don't just look at what you see. The apparent is something you do, but what reaches Allah is something within your bodies, within your minds, within your hearts, which is taqwa. على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء لي الدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So it is always there is always something very important within all the orders and duties of our religion, which is the heart of that action, and that is the true sense of obedience, the true sense of being subservient. Regarding the verse, it has also been narrated that when the people of the Age of Ignorance wanted to slaughter their sacrificial animals, they polluted the sacred house with all those bloods. So, at the first time when the Muslims did pilgrimage, they wanted to do the same thing, but Allah sent down this verse. So, in this holy verse, after repeating the remembrance of the blessing, Allah implies the purpose of making these blessings subservient to you is that since Allah has guided you, you should glorify Him. And with this phrase, it continues, that you might pronounce the greatness of Allah for what He has guided you aright. لِتُكَبِّرُ اللَّهَ عَلَى مَا هَدَاكُمْ. So that you may proclaim His greatness. It can also be inferred from the verse that one of the best ways to glorify Allah, one of the best ways to give thanks to the Almighty Allah, is to just remembering Him by His greatness, to glorify Him, to know and understand and remind ourselves what great bounties He has sent us, even by just looking at these animals and having them as subservient to us. We can understand what great bounties they are, and when we understand that, sometimes is the time they have been taken from us. And let us hope we are never too late on glorifying and giving thanks to the Almighty Allah. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Zionist regime has pushed on with plans to build a new settlement neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds, a watchdog group said on Sunday, November 15th, warning that such efforts were being stepped up before U.S. President Donald Trump leaves office in January. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by the staff of Middle East Eye website, which is published under the heading Israeli Regime Moves Forward with New Al-Quds Settlement. Please stay tuned for the details of this article. The Zionist regime has pushed on with plans to build a new settlement neighborhood in occupied East Al-Quds, a watchdog group said on Sunday, November 15th, warning that such efforts were being stepped up before U.S. President Donald Trump leaves office in January. The Trump administration has broken with decades of bipartisan U.S. practice by not opposing Israeli regime settlement activity in East Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank. In December 2017, the Trump administration broke with international community and recognized the entire city of Al-Quds as the capital of the spurious regime of Israel. In November 2019, the Trump administration said it no longer considered Israeli regime settlements in the occupied West Bank to violate international law, once again going against broad diplomatic consensus. Current U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is set to visit an illegal Israeli regime settlement in the Palestinian West Bank and the Syrian Golan Heights, marking the visit of a U.S. Secretary of State to the occupied Palestinian and Syrian areas. The latest move saw the Israeli regime land authority issue construction tenders in Givat Hamatus, a currently uninhabited area of East Al-Quds, next to the mainly Palestinian neighborhood of Beit Safafa. In February, the Zionist regime's right-wing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu announced the approval of 3,000 homes in the area. He said 2,000 would be allocated for Israelis and 1,000 for Palestinian residents of Beit Safafa. Last week, the land authority issued tenders for construction of more than 1,200 mostly residential units in Givat Hamatus. Amim, an Israeli regime civil society organization that tracks settlements in Al-Quds, and called attention to the tenders on Sunday, November 15th, warned that the next 2 months in the lead-up to the change in Washington, D.C. will be a critical period. "We believe that Israel will attempt to exploit this time to advance moves that the incoming administration will potentially oppose," it said in a statement, pointing out that the bidding period will close on January 18, 2021, 2 days before the new U.S. president's inauguration. Amim reiterated concerns that settlement construction in Givat Hamatus would be a devastating blow to a potential resolution of the Israeli regime occupation of Palestinian lands, as it would cut East Al-Quds off from the West Bank city of Beit Lahm, disrupting the territorial continuity of a future Palestinian state with East Al-Quds as its capital as part of a two-state solution. If carried through, Givat Hamatus would become the first new settlement in East Al-Quds in 20 years, the organization said in a recent statement. Nabil Abu Rodaine, a spokesperson for Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, said the Givat Hamatus tenders amounted to an attempt by the Israeli regime to kill the internationally supported two-state solution. Critics of the two-state solution argue that it is no longer viable because of the Zionist regime's ongoing colonization, with about 400,000 settlers living in the West Bank under the Zionist regime law, using separate education and transport systems in what scholars say amounts to a policy of apartheid. The East Al-Quds tenders follow the approval of 96 new East Al-Quds settler homes in Ramat Shlomo neighborhood last week. The spurious regime of Israel took control of East Al-Quds during 1967 Six-Day War before annexing it in a move not recognized by most of international community.
Around the World with Reporters.
Both mainstream parties in the United States have been profoundly shaken by the election results from November 3rd. While the Democrats may prevail in the still disputed presidential election, their so-called blue wave has been universally described as an abject disaster. Despite unprecedented mainstream media support, widespread leftist-based protests, and record fundraising, they failed to retake the Senate, lost seats in the House, lost one governorship, and failed to flip a single state legislature.
Because this is a census year, Republicans will control drawing up most of the decade's new electoral maps, causing many to say the election was a disastrous setback for progressive causes.
70% of Republicans, 90% of Democratic voters are for Medicare for All. They're for the ending of student debt. They're for a UBI to sustain them, especially during COVID. So these things are very progressive, and the Democrats were against them.
Massive infighting among the party elite is being reported. Older and moderate Democrats blame newly popular progressive causes for the losses, but the Democratic Socialists of America, the left wing of the Democratic Party, won 70% of the races and ballot initiatives they endorsed.
The Democrats really aren't progressive. I would attribute their losses to putting up bad candidates, candidates that are very centrist. So this is the strategy of the Democrats, is we need to be more centrist or more rightist centrist, and they'll blame progressives.
The election results were widely expected to be a repudiation of so-called Trumpism, but analysts say they actually cemented the unprecedented political uprising unexpectedly led by Donald Trump. So-called Trumpian Republicans are now expected to reshape the Conservative Party. There seems to be unanimous agreement that regardless of the final outcome of the presidential election, Trump and his family will have increased, not decreased, control over the Republican Party. A pre-election poll asked Republicans and Republican-leaning independents if they considered themselves a supporter of Trump or a supporter of the Republican Party. 60% picked Trump.
Whichever presidential candidate is finally inaugurated, it seems certain that America has undergone a dramatic political shift, which few people predicted and which many are struggling to understand and accept. Ramin Mazahiri, Chicago.
Sheik Sasaki's trial continued in a Kaduna State High Court in northern Nigeria with the presentation of two prosecution witnesses. The two witnesses were officers of the Nigerian Army who made their presentations in court while journalists stay outside.
They gave evidence about the operation of the military operation that lasted between the 12th and the 14th of December 2015 and the role played by each of them. We just want to see how far we can go tomorrow. The prosecution is not likely to close the case tomorrow. So we then take other days so that we can speedily, have this matter concluded.
Sheik Ibrahim Sasaki is being tried for culpable homicide, unlawful assembly, disruption of public peace, among other allegations, which the Islamic movement has described as fabricated and baseless. In December 2015, soldiers of the Nigerian Army attacked Sasaki's home and worship center, killing over 340 of his supporters. No soldier has been charged for the mass murders of Sasaki's supporters, despite the recommendation of a judicial commission of inquiry set up by the Kaduna State government. Sheik Sasaki has been in detention for close to 5 years in violation of the ruling of a federal high court ordering for his release.
The Nigerian judiciary is a very independent judiciary. So by the grace of Allah, there is going to be a way out for Sheik Ibrahim Al-Zakzaki, in as much as the Nigerian judiciary remain independent. Definitely there is going to be a way out for Sheik Ibrahim Al-Zakzaki through the constitutional means.
Despite being a public trial, no journalist or any member of the Sasaki family has ever been allowed inside the courtroom. Meanwhile, Sasaki supporters have continued to demand for his release in accordance with the order of a federal high court in Abuja. Benjamin Abdullahi, Abuja.
Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has been projected the winner in the disputed U.S. presidential vote. That means in about 2 months, Donald Trump will have to hand in power to Biden. His administration, however, is using every opportunity to take controversial steps. On Thursday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo paid a visit to an Israeli settlement in the occupied West Bank to further consolidate Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands.
During the Trump administration, America stands with Israel like never before. Indeed, the commitment we've made, the ironclad commitment we've made to the Jewish state, will continue.
Pompeo said the U.S. will label the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign as anti-Semitic and cancerous. He said Washington will require that imports from Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank be labeled as made in Israel. In 2016, the United Nations Security Council adopted a resolution to reaffirm the illegality of Israeli settlements. Referring to Israelis as an occupying power, the resolution called on Israel to stop settlement constructions and abide by its obligations under international law. Later in the day, Mike Pompeo also visited the occupied Golan Heights, which Israel seized from Syria in a 1967 war. President Trump recognized Israel's sovereignty over the region last year. Pompeo's Thursday visits drew the ire of the Palestinians. A spokesman for Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas slammed the U.S. labeling move as a violation of international law. Also, senior member of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Wassel Abu Youssef, said Pompeo's labeling announcement, quote, reaffirms the partnership between U.S. President Trump and the occupation. Another senior PLO member, Hanan Ashrawi, said Mike Pompeo's visit is aimed at setting another illegal precedent. Pompeo's visits to an Israeli settlement and the occupied Golan Heights were controversial enough. However, they are dwarfed by other anti-Palestinian moves taken by the Trump administration in the past 4 years. Trump announced Jerusalem al-Quds as the capital of Israel. Palestinians say the city belongs to them and is the capital of their state. Trump also relocated the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to al-Quds. The American president also showed unprecedented support for Israeli crimes, including bombardment of the Gaza Strip and killing of Palestinians across the occupied territories, setting new precedents in Washington's deep-seated and biased support for the Israeli occupation and crimes against Palestinians.
Millions of businesses across the EU's 27 member states remain closed due to COVID-19. Retail, hospitality, and aviation sectors have been decimated by the pandemic.
People who never were really in the risk of poverty are now really at the risk of poverty. They are now queuing up for food aid.
The European Commission has just published its EU Economic Semester Report 2021, and things are not looking good.
We will have an incomplete and uneven recovery over the coming 2 years, and with persistent uncertainty and multiple risks.
The Commission's report highlights how a debt mountain is growing in the EU, particularly in key nations such as Italy and France. Lobby groups are questioning whether financial support packages already announced will be sufficient.
Is it going to start a new growth for Europe and employment for Europe? We are not sure either. So it's a lot of promise. They have to deliver, because otherwise people will be so disappointed and the trust will completely disappear.
The EU is experiencing its sharpest ever decline in employment due to the pandemic, and things were certainly not perfect even before COVID-19. The European Commission says political leaders across the bloc must take decisive action to prevent social catastrophe.
We need a quick agreement on all elements of EU's 1.82 trillion euros recovery package to support the real economy. People and businesses are waiting.
The EU Commission says 4.1 million temporary jobs have been lost in the bloc. Young adults have been impacted most severely.
Suicide rates in the EU are on the up. Therefore, social rights groups say the need for governments to agree on financial support is not just about the economy. It is, in fact, a matter of life and death. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Coronavirus infections among the general population are rapidly rising in the Gaza Strip, with nearly 500 cases being discovered on a daily basis. On Wednesday, 4 deaths were reported and 600 infections were detected, bringing the number of infections to over 12,000. Hospitals in Gaza, meanwhile, are running low on intensive care units and ventilators, as well as medicines and equipment. During a press conference, the Ministry of Interior in Gaza raised the alarm over the rising number of infections.
The Ministry of Interior may be forced to take some extreme and tough measures, including a full lockdown given the high number of daily infections. Today, the rate of infections has increased more than 20% compared with only 5% during the first weeks of the spread of the deadly virus.
Due to the Israeli blockade, nearly 2 million Gazans are under terrible strain, and their worries over the coronavirus have been heavily compounded.
The rapid rise in the number of infections is frightening. Given the current circumstances, we are praying for a miracle to keep us safe during this deadly pandemic.
The blockade has destroyed our economy, and a full lockdown will be catastrophic. I think a partial lockdown is better so that people can make a living amid the dire economic situation.
The coronavirus spread among the general population has taken its toll on the impoverished coastal sliver. A full lockdown was imposed on the Gaza Strip in late August for a period of 2 weeks after authorities confirmed the first coronavirus cases spread through the community.
During the full lockdown, factories and businesses were completely closed, inflicting a heavy blow on the economic sector of the enclave, which has been battered by the Israeli blockade. All institutions, including civil society organizations, are suffering from lack of funding as poverty and unemployment rates increasing rapidly.
The coronavirus continues to threaten the socio-economic welfare of Palestinians living in Gaza as much as their health.
People here are bracing themselves for the worst as coronavirus infections continue to increase at a fast pace amid the crippling Israeli blockade. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
A latest report by the Italian Pediatric Society has highlighted that 12% of COVID-19 infections, or 126,000 cases, regarded children or teenagers. The study, based on monitoring data from the Higher Health Institute, has found that over 36,000 were under 10, while around 90,000 were in the 10 to 19 age group. The report stressed that the fatality rate was extremely low and that the vast majority only manifested minor clinical forms of COVID-19.
A study carried out by Rome's University of La Sapienza has found that in some Italian regions, the number of infant deaths at birth tripled during the lockdown months. This is due to the fact that most health checks were cancelled or postponed.
The most likely reason behind this is that many mothers-to-be did not attend medical checks for fears of being infected with COVID-19. We monitored the number of newborns in all Lazio's region's hospitals in March, April and May, and we noted a new significant drop compared to the same period last year.
The study has also found that the number of premature newborns went down considerably during the lockdown months compared to the year before.
This is a positive data point which has to be associated to the fact that mothers-to-be were in mandatory time off due to the COVID-19 restrictions. The most important message from this report is that pregnant women must continue to attend medical checks to prevent neonatal complications.
Meanwhile, Italy's hospitals are facing overwhelming pressure from the coronavirus pandemic. Health authorities fear that there will be more COVID-19 patients in need of intensive care by the last week of November than during the spring peak. Max Civili, Rome.
Austria goes into its second hard lockdown, with all shops, hotels, bars, restaurants and schools for older children closed until the 6th of December. The curfew that was in place for the past few weeks during the night will now be extended through the day. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz announced that Austria will conduct mass testing in December, using neighbouring Slovakia as its model, in an attempt to save Christmas and guarantee the safe reopening of schools.
In the next few weeks, the government plans to order millions of antigen tests. We want to be able to test the population at the time of reopening. In this way, many asymptomatic people will be discovered and isolated.
Austria's health minister has appealed to the people to use the Stop Corona app, developed by the Austrian Red Cross, to help identify chains of infection and break them. Through this app, users create what's known as digital handshakes. When a user is infected, they can activate an alert message, and people who are in contact with the infected person will be notified automatically.
Based on forecasts, on average there will be 7,000 new infections per day this week. That is too high. Everyone can contribute to prevent the overloading of the health system. We have a limited capacity in the intensive care units. We need to significantly decrease the current influx.
The government has come under criticism for weak contact tracing. The opposition says mass testing would only make sense if it can be repeated regularly. Vaccination will be the game changer, Sebastian Kurz says, and he suggested it can begin gradually in the first quarter of 2021, with health workers and vulnerable groups getting it first. For now, people are being warned every contact is one too many. Homa Liski, Vienna.
With Christmas right around the corner, retailers can only hope and pray the November lockdown is not extended beyond December 2nd. After the severe blow dealt it by the first lockdown, the British economy bounced back by 15.5% in the July to September period, but the worry is that it will shrink again over the winter months. Weak household spending is being blamed for the UK's poor GDP performances.
The unemployment rate in the UK is continuing to surge, and redundancy rates are at an all-time high. Millions of Britons are struggling to make ends meet, and millions more are saving their pennies for even rainier days.
I'm quite happy with what the Chancellor has done. Of course, everybody is, and everybody won't be when they talk about how to get these monies back. I mean, he's talked about cutting duty-free. People are complaining about that.
Concerned, very concerned about the younger people in particular, because of unemployment, because of the huge debt there's going to be. It's a massive, massive worry. And I don't think we've seen how bad it's going to be yet.
Yeah. I think the situation with Brexit is a complete shambles. You know, the government doesn't seem to have a grip on it, just as it doesn't seem to have a grip on the COVID epidemic. I mean, it's terribly worrying. I mean, I've got two sons, both who work in hospitality, and they're worried stiff about what's going to happen.
The extension of the furlough scheme might help encourage spending. The government will now be paying 80% of the salaries of workers retained by firms rather than fired until March. Britain's manufacturing sector will be getting a massive tax break extension as well. But according to the Bank of England, things will get worse before they get better. It predicts the UK's GDP could shrink by 2% in the October-December quarter, and its economy is likely to shrink by a record 11% in 2020 before growing by just 7% in 2021. But did the UK have this coming despite COVID-19?
The present situation started a year ago, last September, when the banks began to refuse to lend money to each other, and there was a panic in the banking system. Now, that is always the first sign of a coming huge economic collapse. It always happens about a year or two before the actual collapse. The debt levels have built up to be completely unrepayable. The rich-poor division has increased, and the type of jobs coming into existence due to the technological shift are now temporary and part-time.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Director of Communications, Lee Kane, has quit, and now his top advisor, Dominic Cummings, has left as well. Some say this will make for smoother Brexit talks, due to resume this week before an EU summit on Thursday. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The British Labour Party has found itself entangled in yet another racism crisis after a new report found huge levels of Islamophobia within the party. The report, commissioned by the newly formed Labour Muslim Network, suggests that current party leader Sir Keir Starmer has greatly lost the trust of his party's Muslim members. Just some of the damning results claim that
More than one in four Muslim members and supporters have experienced Islamophobia within